This is Forced Migration Review, Issue 62, October 2019. Forced to Return, Facilitated Return of Refugees to Myanmar, by Yuka Hasegawa. Despite recent political developments in Myanmar and difficult conditions in Thailand, there has been widespread and deep-seated reluctance among refugees to participate in the official facilitated return mechanism. In early 2016, the conflict in Myanmar appeared to be in a state of transformation. The nationwide ceasefire agreement was signed in October 2015, and the new government came into power in April 2016. The areas of return in the southeast of the country were enjoying a period of relative stability. It was presumed, therefore, that refugees in 9 refugee settlements in Thailand would be anxious to return home. In 2016, the governments of Myanmar and Thailand put in place a facilitated return mechanism with the support of the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR. But it has failed to generate any significant return momentum, and only 729 refugees out of a population of 100,000 have opted to participate so far. Endnote 1. Stakeholder attitudes. One could argue that the return of refugees would have signified peace and the genuine political will of the authorities and the ethnic armed organizations, EAOs, to move beyond conflict. This could also have been an opportunity for the government to demonstrate its ability to provide protection to minority groups. However, the government, military, and EAOs did not necessarily consider the official return of refugees as an immediate priority. Many stakeholders were skeptical of the speed of the political negotiation process through which the return of refugees may eventually be realized. The nationwide ceasefire agreement was signed by only 8 of the 15 EAOs. As such, this agreement and the subsequent Pidongsu Accord, which laid out 37 agreed points towards a peace process, did not provide a solid platform for a return process. With the inauguration of the new government, Myanmar entered a new phase of the state-building process, not the end of it. There were many reforms needed, and meanwhile, the delicate balance of power between the civilian government and the military had to be negotiated at all levels. On a day-to-day basis, there was some confusion over how authorities' decision-making processes functioned. In the face of these complexities, the authorities and the EAOs did not prevent the return of refugees, but nor were they ready to actively promote it. The refugees themselves, who are from Karen and other ethnic groups from southeast Myanmar, did not push to return either. There was some excitement over the political changes happening in Myanmar, but for many refugees, the prospect of return was vague, and they were reluctant to give up the limited freedoms available to them in the temporary shelters in Thailand without more concrete evidence of the benefits of return. Many refugees had been resettled from Thailand to a third country, and hope persisted among those who remained, even though resettlement had been phased out, that they too would be resettled. The refugees made major decisions collectively rather than individually. There was a general tendency to follow their leaders who, in turn, were usually influenced by the political positions of the EAOs. The refugees in general had little motivation to participate and take a role in state development and peacebuilding. Many thought that the authorities in Myanmar had not demonstrated sufficiently that they would welcome their return. The refugee leaders were hesitant to fully shift their advocacy activities into Myanmar, and some of them were not willing to lead the return, but wanted rather to be the last people to return. The refugees also envisioned return in groups, which had the effect of inhibiting individual decisions to return. Overall, the refugees showed no urgency to return to Myanmar. The role of the international community. The main stakeholders, the refugees, the authorities in Myanmar, and EAOs, did not think that the time was ripe for return in 2016 and 2017.